God damn it! I get it!
It was just crap. It was terrible.
I was titillated.
I know you want to go.
No, I slept with like 3 girls a night and no one ever said anything.
Dude!
Oh god, you guys are disgusting.
Boring.
So boring.
That is an amazing film.
Ooh, I love me some Statham.
That's a little bit of brilliance that just came out of your mouth there, Justin. I like it.
Do you want to keep going?
Welcome back, boys and girls, to another fun episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. David here, just chilling out with Randy and Justin. How you boys doing today?
Fabulous. Thank you, David.
Excellent. Thank you.
No time to mess around. Getting right into it. Randy, Bond, go.
Holy crap. So a couple weeks ago on the podcast, we announced that there was going to be a new Bond villain, or rather a familiar one with a new face. Blofeld was going to come back in the form of Christoph Waltz. We didn't know what the name of the Bond movie was, but there was a gigantic announcement just within the past week where we got not only the name, but all sorts of fun cast stuff was revealed as well. But without any further ado, the name of Bond number 24 is Spectre, which is pretty darn cool because Spectre is the name of Bond's kind of arch nemesis villain group kind of more or less ruled over by Blofeld, which is Christoph Waltz's character. So very, very cool. Very happy to see the large criminal organization come back into play. And I hope it's going to be done a little bit slightly less cheesy than the 60s and 70s movies were done with Spectre. But you know what? I don't mind. I don't mind the throwback. I'm all about it. And they also showed the new Bond car that's going to be in the movie. It's an Aston Martin DB10. And you guys will remember that in the 60s, they made all sorts of waves with the Aston Martin DB5, which became synonymous with James Bond. And same silver paint scheme, you know, very similar looking cars, of course, with 50 years difference in time from having made them, but still very iconic. And I could easily see that being a super tricked out Bond car. So I hope Q lives up to his predecessor's abilities and tricks the shit out of this car.
Like with spinners?
Spinning rims. It's cheesy, like the spin-off, but I want to see a lair. Like I want to see like a super
like a mountain lair or something underwater.
I'd be down for that. I wouldn't mind it.
I would too. I like a little bit of cheese in my Bond movies.
I gotta have a little bit. What do you think of because the quantum whatever their evil organization was, they played prominently into the first two Daniel Craig movies, Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace, and they kind of went away in Skyfall. And we're hearing that they'll be back in some capacity in this one. Now, since they're kind of a bootleg Spectre, do you think that they'll just be in the very beginning of the movie and like Blofeld and Spectre will just take them out? Or do you think they'll have bigger undercurrents, or were they just a pawn of Spectre this whole time? What do you think?
I would love to see the big boot of Spectre come in and just crush them. Like, no matter how badass we may have thought they were in the first couple Bond movies, now they just pale in comparison to this massively super funded and just super wicked evil bad guys. Or they could just get, you know, kind of folded into the mix, and they could be working with Spectre all along, kind of like you said. So who knows? I really have no idea one way or the other. I'm just excited to see it.
It'd be a good way for them to instantly give Spectre credit, like street cred. Like, this organization was the bad guy in two Bond films, and they just like made him go away like P-words. Now, what do you think now, if Walt is Blofeld, which, you know, all signals are pointing that way, especially the name of the organization, the bullet hole poster looks a lot like, you know, Blofeld's, like, you know, Spectre insignia ring. What Blofeld's defining trait do you think will come through? Do you think we'll get a white cat? You think we'll get a no, I expect you to die, Mr. Bond? What do you think we're going to get? Randy.
That is a damn fine question. I'm gonna go with the bald head and the white cat. Can I have two? Because I'd like two. Those
sure.
are the two I want.
You can have as many as you want.
Yeah. And was that Blofeld that said I expect you to die, or was that
Goldfinger?
Is that Goldfinger?
Ah, damn it, that's right. You are right. Thanks for calling me out. I'm being an idiot.
Does he have that scar on his face because he was wearing like a monocle and then he got face damage and the monocle protected around his eye? Like, why does he have that crazy line there?
That is a good question. He was aggressively putting on the monocle and slipped.
Yeah. I'm transfixed with the term face damage.
Best band name ever. I couldn't think of a nice way of putting it. I'm under the opinion that maybe he had a monocle on, and then maybe like a saw got put to his face, and the monocle protected around his eye.
I could see that. Bit of boiling acid.
Exactly. Holy smokes. I think that'd be
sweet. Well, if you know the answer to that, email us at infogeeklegacy.com and let us know how Blofeld got that wicked cool scar.
Got the face damage.
Yeah, how'd he get the face damage? did you guys watch the announcement? I'm pretty excited for it now. What about you guys, Randy? Are you excited now? Are you more or less excited now?
I'm actually kind of more excited, and one of the reasons is because everyone's taking it so seriously and they're treating it with such respect. You know, I didn't watch the announcement live, but in our article, there's the little like 10 or 15 minutes excerpt was posted to YouTube, and I watched it all the way through, and they had all the cast come out, and they unveiled the car and the title and everything. I just thought it was really classy the way that they did it, and I'm just really super glad that after 24 movies, they're still putting this much effort and love and care into this franchise. You know what I mean? Because after 24 movies, it seems like they could just so easily just like go back to the well and just keep churning out crap. You know, like no offense, because I love Pierce Brosnan as a Bond, but a lot of his movies, they were just they lacked a lot of creativity. They were just kind of, maybe they were just a product of their time. You know, the late 90s, early 2000s, they just weren't incredibly original, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah. Well, it helps too with Bond 24 that Bond 23 made $812 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess I shouldn't really be saying anything about originality or creativity, considering they're bringing back all these old characters, and maybe that can be considered going back to the well. But
again, the first one for Daniel Craig was like basically a remake.
Right. Exactly.
Except he played Holden this time instead of Baccarat.
Right.
What about Monica Bellucci as a Bond girl?
I think she's smoking hot. I think she's drop-dead gorgeous. When she's 200 years old, I'm going to say the exact same thing.
Yeah, it's crazy that the only thing people are saying about her is that she's the oldest Bond girl. You know, they're not talking about how hot she is. They're just going, oh my God, she's 50.
I agree. I'm on board. Yeah, well, that's cool. Bond. Bring it. Got to wait a little bit to see it, but, you know, 2016's not that far away, I guess.
Basically 2 years away when it's all said and done.
Yeah. They want to. By then, Hobbit will be done. Hunger Games will be done. You know, that might have less competition.
It'll be a nice break from all those Marvel and DC films.
Yeah, but are we going to be getting a Star Wars movie that December? Is that the first spinoff?
Supposedly, we haven't heard much about it, so we'll have to wait and see. You know, the goal was one a year, but you know, they've been so heavy on Episode 7 that I think the Gareth Edwards bounty hunter movie might have to be a little delayed, but. That's speculation for another podcast. You know what else happened this week? Terminator. Justin, you saw the trailer. You loved it. Tell me about it.
I loved it.
I don't know.
I liked it.
Maybe you did.
I thought it was fun. Yeah, when did it launch? Last week on December 4th, I believe. Terminator. Genesis. This is Alan Taylor's take on the movie. Of course, he directed Thor the Dark World. And it's not the same Terminator movie that it used to. It is in the sense that there's time travel, but things have taken an interesting turn, or a split, rather, and that we get to see an alternate timeline, basically. All this messing with time, we get Biff Tannen's 1985, which is kind of weird. It's going to be interesting. I don't know. I think it's going to be fun. I'm not sure if it'll be, amazing, but I think it'll be a good summer movie. I'm cool with that. I like my Schwarzenegger movies in the summertime. I don't think there's no other better time. It does, right? I'm going to sit there with a bucket of cola and my big old popcorn's there, and I'm going to watch Terminator action. Of course, the big twist here is that Sarah Connor, who we know is always hating Terminator, she's had nothing but a bad experience with them. Even when they're saving her life, she still hates them. That's like her thing. Now she has sort of a daddy Terminator, and she's kind of taking a new light to him, right?
Now she got daddy issues.
Yeah, all them pops. She does. And I think that's kind of fun. It's something that will probably work better as like a, what do you call those things? Like a graphic novel? Like I got to picture this as just kind of like a one-shoot graphic novel kind of thing, like a fun read, but you never would have ever thought it possible.
like comparing it to the Star Wars comics, like the Infinity Tales, the ones that would just go off on a tangent that would never actually happen, but it's a kind of a cool what if.
Exactly. I kind of like that vibe.
What I really like about Luke
missed in A New Hope and didn't blow up the Death Star.
there you go.
That was my favorite. I like that one a lot.
One of the things I like the most about the Terminator trailer is the fact that it looks like it's going to be bringing together elements from a lot of the original movies. And it was something that I just pointed out before we started recording today. In the T-1000, it's not actually played by Robert Patrick, but in one specific shot in the trailer, when he's morphing from the hood of a car, getting ready to look like jump onto something, you totally see in that liquid metal Terminator, you see the face of Robert Patrick. And it was very iconic from imagery like they used in T2. And just seeing the original Arnold Terminator and then the Robert Patrick T-1000 makes me wonder what else they're going to try to kind of bring back in from the original series. But those little nods and keeping the likenesses of those characters in that window of time, to me, makes me all sorts of giddy. It's one of the things I like about time travel movie. One of the things I like about Back to the Future 2, revisiting a previous film. And to me, that's what it feels like this new Terminator is going to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
revisiting.
Now let me see if I got the story down. If you guys think I'm right, so Terminator goes back. So everything from like 84 Terminator happens at the beginning. You know, Kyle Reese is getting sent back to protect them from the Terminator that's getting sent back in the 1984 Terminator. But somehow they send a different Terminator way back when to where Sarah Connor was 9, and he raises Sarah Connor from the age of 9, and he waits for the Terminator from the 84 Terminator to show up, kills him. And then now Kyle Reese, old Pops Terminator, and Sarah Connor are going to try to stop Judgment Day again. That sound about what you guys got from that?
Totally. But here's my thing, and it has to do with all time travel movies. By doing that, aren't they completely altering the timeline to the point where that version of the future never would have happened to have sent back those Terminators?
You can't think time travel rules when you think Terminator.
I know, but I'm having a hard time wrapping my brain around it.
Yeah, Skynet was formed because they found the Terminator arm and the chip at the end of Terminator 1, but they couldn't make it if it's never sent back. You know, I just went cross-eyed. I'm with Justin on that one. So a lot of times it's best just to not think about stuff.
Right. It's not stopping Judgment Day. It's keeping Sarah Connor alive so she can have a John Connor, and then got to keep him alive so he can lead the resistance.
Yeah. So give me your excitement level from a 1 to 10 pre-trailer and post-trailer, Randy.
Pre-trailer, based on the images we saw on Entertainment Weekly, like a 1. Now after the trailer, I would say about an 8.
All right. What about you,
exaggerating?
What about you, Justin?
Wow. Okay. So I'm not as mean. I like Terminators and I like visiting the franchise. So I was more at like a 6 pre-trailer, and then as well, I'm an 8 post-trailer.
Yeah, I was probably, just from the Terminator factor alone, I was probably at about a 7 before. I'm about a 6 now. The trailer was a little underwhelming, you know, but, you know, I'm sure by the time we start seeing more, I'll probably end up back up at an 8.
Hey, and I get my old guy Terminator. I've been fucking trying to get that forever.
Yeah.
Robots do it.
All you need is acid-spitting lifesavers, and then you know somebody is tapping your phone lines and listening to you directly.
I know. Yeah.
And Toy Story 4's trailer, movie's about what we talked about that one time.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was.
Home Alone.
That's what it was. It was a good idea.
Yeah. But.
Speaking of Home Alone, did you guys hear about Pottermore?
No. Tell me all about it.
J.K. Rowling, the author of all the Harry Potter books, has bestowed a holiday gift upon us. Of course, Pottermore is like the social media kind of site where people can go and like read behind the scenes things about Harry Potter. And Rowling's actually been pretty good about publishing, you know, short stories from time to time. She did one on Dolores Umbridge for Halloween. And if you didn't hate that C word before, I just read it the whole time. I'm like, man, I'm glad she gets what she deserves. And then, so for Christmas, for the 12 days of Christmas, from December 12th to December 23rd, at 8 a.m. Eastern time, Rawlings is going to release a new short story every day for 12 days straight. They range from a number of topics, but the one that got me most interested were, it was going to be her definitive thoughts on Harry Potter's nemesis, Draco Malfoy. And I don't know, we don't know if that's a good thing for Mr. Malfoy or a bad thing. She kind of left him in a semi-ambiguous way at the end of Deathly Hallows. You know, he doesn't know to ask Azkaban, and him and Potter on each other's throat to kind of give each other that little what's up nod, like, yeah, hey, you know, we cool now, we cool. Yeah, but don't try nothing, or I'm going to shove my broom up your butt or something. So, yeah, I'm excited. I actually signed up for Pottermore.
Oh, really? It's a pay site.
There's a couple different options. I haven't gone too deep into it. I believe if you want to get the stories, I think you might end up having to pay if you want them right away. I think after a while they get archived, but I could be completely making this up. So, you know, infogeeklyxy.com, let us know, 411. We appreciate your doing our fact-checking for us.
Well, I heard she's going broke, see? So she needs to charge people.
Well, she is right, and she's writing her her Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. That's going to be a trilogy, so she's helping write those screenplays. So I think she's doing okay. Now, if you could have one character in the Harry Potter universe that is kind of an underdeveloped character, Justin, who would you want to see your story dedicated to?
An underdeveloped character?
Well, you know, like, I mean, someone not Harry, not
someone
Ron,
that's not
Hermione. Not
exciting.
Well, so someone who's not one of the big three who's gotten a lot of screen time. It's like someone like your, like for me, it'd be Neville. I would like to. I like a Neville story because I like Neville. Who would be your Neville, or in Rowling's case, her Draco? She wanted to explore Draco. What minor character would you like to see expanded upon?
I don't know how to answer that. I mean, I've always wondered what makes Dumbledore so great. The man's been through a lot, and up until Deathly Hallows, he was relatively unscathed. So I would like to see some of his crazy battles, to be honest. Yeah. If, when it's all said and done, that's what I would be interested in.
Right, like young Dumbledore in his prime, like just effing shit up. Yeah, because it's kind of like the Wild West. Like, it'd be cool, like, to see a Dumbledore story maybe in that time frame to where everyone's, like, trying to, like, prove they're the best. They want to be, like, the best, and so to be the best, you got to beat the best, and you know, Dumbledore is having, like, defend himself and stuff like that. Like a Billy the Kid type thing.
Yeah, or Wild Bill. Bill's the one that always had to defend himself.
Oh, was he? Sorry.
He was the fastest gun in the West.
Maybe Billy the Kid grew up to be Wild Bill.
Billy the Kid was just a juvenile that stole horses.
Delinquent.
Well, what about you, Randy? What character would you like to see expanded upon?
I'm having a hard time narrowing it down. I've got three in my mind, but I'm going to go with probably one of my favorites. And this might sound silly, but I kind of want to know more about Hagrid's backstory. I want to see, like, when he was attempting to go to Hogwarts. I want to see just what happened when he kind of washed out, that sort of thing. I don't know. I think that would be kind of fun. He's a neat character, and it wouldn't necessarily be a dark story, but it wouldn't be centered completely around Hogwarts like Harry's tale.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was Voldemort's roommate, so, you know, probably ends bad for him.
What are the other two?
My other two would have been Snape, because for whatever reason, I love Snape. And then the other one would have been Dobby.
Fuck that guy. I hate Dobby.
Snape, Dobby.
Oh my god, I hate that asshole.
I watched Goblet of Fire has been on HBO lately, and it was my least favorite of the films, with the exception of Deathly Hallows Part 1. But I watched it, and as I'm watching it, and I'm like, yeah, it's not that bad. And then I remember, I'm like, I should reread Goblet of Fire, the book. And then first thing that came to mind was that spew shit. And I'm like, oh no, I don't have to read that.
Yeah. The house elf thing.
Yeah. House elves.
And Bagman and Crouch, that chapter. Holy shit.
I'll just skip to when they're at school.
Yeah. You might as well. I guess it would be interesting to, like, when McGonagall's going on about the Chamber of Secrets and how the school was first formed. That was a really good, like, kind of campfire tale, and that would be interesting to see explored too, the forming of the school. But whatever.
What's going on with Jeremy Irons? I hear he's talking all sorts of nonsense about Batman to be Superman's Alfred.
Yeah, so we hadn't really heard much about the fact that, I guess it was revealed a little while ago that he was going to be Alfred, but people haven't been talking about it much. And it was recently revealed that his version of Alfred isn't going to have a whole lot of screen time, but what we do see of him, he's going to have a very quote-unquote hands-on type of role. And a lot of people have been saying how that's such a complete departure from Alfred's past, you know. And I actually would argue that, because I don't know if you guys have been keeping up with the new Gotham TV series, but one of the things that I find kind of difficult to swallow is the fact that they portray Alfred, instead of being this prim and proper British butler, he is kind of a Cockney-speaking backstreet brawler who's teaching Bruce Wayne how to fist fight. That, to me, does not that's not the sweet, lovable old man that raised a wounded Bruce Wayne to become the fierce Batman he becomes. I don't know. It's weird. It makes sense that he would kind of be this strong male role model in his life to kind of look up to in the absence of his father. So I agree with the ideal of having Alfred be this really strong kind of hands-on character, but I don't know. It just seems so different from the other film versions. But at the same time, it's almost like as if in unison, they made this Alfred change across the board with the Gotham TV show and with this movie. You know, both happening within about a year's time of one another. Does that seem weird to you guys? Does it seem like it was coordinated, or am I just drawing a connection that's not there?
I think you're drawing a connection that I don't think was intentional, but I think it makes total sense. I don't think Fox and Warner Brothers are chatting. but yeah, it totally makes sense that they would be the same. But I always thought, like, Michael Caine's Alfred was pretty hands-on. I mean, Bruce Wayne's going to die in Batman Begins until Alfred shows up and Alfred beats people with golf clubs and stuff. Maybe my definition of hands-on, maybe Irons is talking more about, like, how you're talking about with Gotham and stuff like that, to where I was more like, I always thought Alfred was an integral part of the Bat team.
Oh yeah, I'm not negating his worth.
It's interesting because his name is Pennyworth.
But I don't know. it's a lot for some people to swallow, and I don't think they're ready for it. And a lot of people aren't watching that Gotham show, and it could just rub people the wrong way. But here's what it really comes down to. Is it going to make that big a difference for the super short amount of time that we see him on screen? I mean, he is a relatively minor character, considering you've got all these super-powered nutzos running around in tights.
What if hands-on is just code for he beats him when he's a kid?
Yeah. Or
great touchdown. Yeah.
Molestation.
They're not kid gloves, Mr. Valiant.
I don't want Alfred. Alfred doesn't even have a purpose in this movie.
Yeah, exactly. I'm kind of with you there. I was surprised that we even have an Alfred going on.
There's so many people
for
in
the
this
flashbacks
movie.
With the Wayne Thomas and Martha Wayne getting murdered. That's when you'll see him.
There should be no one from the Batman universe except for Batman in this movie.
Alfred kills Thomas and Martha Wayne so he can have the controlling stakes in Wayne Manor. It's his house.
So he can be controlling the steak in Bruce Wayne.
How do you want that cooked, Mr. Wayne?
Bloody.
Different kind of steak.
Whereas Randy went back to the pedophilia, well, you went to meat.
Culinary arts.
And then David brought it back to the pedophilia.
Yeah, I wasn't going to let it go.
You're combining the two, really. So.
Yeah. Take a little from column A, a little from column B, and put it together. Yeah.
Alfred is integral in shaping Bruce Wayne, but I guess he's pretty terrible at it he's terrible at raising him because he can't let go. Bruce is an angry, angry man.
Bit of a
I guess to a point. At some point, doesn't he just kind of teeter over and just say, you know what, now I just have to do this? At first I was doing this for vengeance, but now I'm doing it for the little guy. I mean, he gets over it, right?
I don't think so.
He never gets over it?
I don't think so. It stays with you.
Does it? I guess I wouldn't know. I'm not in that position. I'm not a billionaire, and B, my parents weren't in front of me when I was a kid. But
sometimes you gotta make trade-offs. You wanna be a millionaire? Parents gotta get murdered in front of you.
Yeah. I don't know. It just seems weird. I would think after all that time, he would... I mean, according to just a track record of grieving, eventually you get over it.
Right. Well played.
Time heals all wounds.
Yeah, it does. You know what else heals all wounds? Star Trek 3, Roberto Orsi. What's up?
I hear he's not directing the movie of Star Trek 3 no mo. He, I don't know if he was necessarily fired, but definitely stepped down. And now there are talks of other folks sitting in the director's chair, one of which is Edgar Wright, who up until recently was employed to do freaking Ant-Man, but not no mo. Now he's possibly making Star Trek 3. How do you guys feel about that?
Feel better than I did when it was Roberto Orsi.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? Maybe Roberto Orsi would have been fine. By all accounts, he's a huge Star Trek fan, and he's responsible for shaping the Star Trek universe as it currently stands, for better or for worse.
Which I enjoy. Which yeah. I enjoy.
And there are definitely people on both sides, so it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it would have been his feature film directorial debut, which
you know. Have a problem with. You don't want this multi-million, what is it, $200 million movie?
Yeah, it's a little scary. I mean, the budget.
This is an amateur hour at Paramount Studios, Dave.
Yeah, and you know, I just think that you know, this is a franchise that's you know been around for quite a long time, and the reboot's been around for you know 5 years now, and they've had two successful films, and you know, a lot of people accredited the success to J.J. Abrams, and you know, he obviously stepped down to go to the better of the Star franchises in the Star Wars there, and yeah, just. Roberto Orsi just wasn't the guy, I don't think.
You know, Edgar Wright wasn't the guy for Ant-Man.
No.
Maybe he's the guy for... And that just wrapped principal photography.
Yeah. Well, did you hear what Evangeline Lilly was saying about it was that Edgar Wright's Ant-Man would have been absolutely unbelievably amazing, but it would have never fit into the Marvel universe.
Right. She said it would have stuck out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
And Marvel wants their movies to kind of go together in some form.
Well, yeah, the Marvel Cinematic Universe has turned into kind of like a long-form television show. Like, all the movies are basically episodes in their television series. You know, right. they all are pretty much, they all have the same look. You know, they all have, you know, they all look the same. You know, they all have similar themes, and they can all be interchanged. Which isn't a bad thing, you know. The bad thing of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is now everyone is so quick to start these cinematic universes now. Like, you know, we have the Robin Hood one. We have the vampire one. Mm-hmm. You know, we have DC's making there. We have, obviously, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And, yeah, I don't know. It just seems like we're stretching here.
Right.
And again, sequels, prequels, and reboots.
Right. And with regards to Ant-Man, it's like... Any artist, when you have a collection, they all need to go together. Sure, they need to be different in their own way, but they want to all be one cohesive unit, otherwise it doesn't work. And that's where Ant-Man would have lied. But with Star Trek, I mean, I like Edgar Wright. I like his movies. They're fun. I think he's got the right blend of humor with all of them, and I think it'll work. The Star Trek crew's funny, man. They're good for laughs. When they're not saving the world, they making me laugh. Sometimes they make me laugh whilst saving the world, and that's okay.
Yeah, and Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg are buddies.
They are. Dave, you were telling me that Simon Pegg snuck Edgar Wright onto the set, disguised him as a director, and he actually directed a scene.
Yeah, they hogtied J.J. Abrams and locked him in the trunk of a car, and Edgar Wright pretended to be J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
No, but it is true. Yeah, he did go on set, and he did direct one shot of Star Trek Into Darkness.
That's fun.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's so basically he's directed more than Orsi has.
He has. Trek. He's directed one shot more of Star Trek than Roberto Orsi.
Yeah, and now he won't ever be able to take that away from him.
Nope.
That talent is going to keep going up if he gets the job.
That's right. He'll be now, in the tube.
And there is a short list of directors involved with this, or at least that Paramount is hoping to get, but I guess Edgar Wright is amongst them, and I don't think people would complain.
No. He's very distinct visually, and, you know, it's a good time because, you know, this is the franchise is now venturing into space. You know, they're starting their 5-year mission, so conceivably we won't be on Earth or confined to the near-Earth system mm-hmm. like we were in the first two. So, you know, visually you can change it up. And one of the good things – oh, sorry.
Okay.
I was going to say one of the things that's amazing about Edgar Wright and is maddening to, like, a company like Marvel is that – Edgar Wright is meticulous. Like, if you watch an Edgar Wright movie, like, every shot is meticulously planned out, meticulously shot. He storyboards like crazy. And he's probably the master of, like, pre-visualization. Like, he knows what his movie is going to look like before he even sets foot on set. And he's very stylized. I mean, Shaun of the take his Coronado trilogy for what it is. They're not just stupid comedies. They could easily have just been like slapstick comedies, but Shaun of the Dead turns into a pretty realistic horror movie at one point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Hot Fuzz turns into a pretty wicked action movie at one point. And, you know, at World's End, you know, you got aliens and all that nonsense. So I'm a fan of Edgar Wright. And if he gets this, that's great.
Yeah, Hot Fuzz is my favorite. I know a lot of people like Shaun of the Dead more, but Hot Fuzz is pretty goddamn good.
I agree. I'm a more Hot Fuzz guy. Like, because it just turns on a dime.
Yeah, like when the reporter's face gets just destroyed from that statue.
Yeah. Or that, when Timothy Dalton gets impaled in the mouth.
Yeah, he's like, ah! Oh my god, all those old people with guns. It's just crazy. It's a wacky movie, man.
Yeah.
Very British.
Sorry, Randy, we haven't let you talk at all. What do you think? Roberto Arce, tell me you don't give a crap.
I don't really give a crap. The only thing that I'm deeply familiar with of his was Fringe. And, I mean, of late, so...
Oh, you don't watch Sleepy Hollow, right?
I do not, no.
Yeah, I quit watching it.
Did you watch Lost?
I did, but I wasn't as into it fanatically as everybody else in the world seemed to be.
If you IMDb Roberto Orsi and his writing partner, Alec Kurtzman, who they recently broke up, like he's pretty much wrote every major blockbuster for the last, like, 6 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're talking Transformers, we're talking Spider-Man, we're talking X-Men, we're talking everything.
Ever.
He's got his fingers in lots of pies.
Yeah, his germs.
Yeah. Yeah, Edgar Wright. We'll see if he gets.
See if not he gets Ant-Man.
It. Not Ant-Man. Which will probably be stupid.
Probably. And you know what? Everyone's going to be like, oh, but Edgar Wright would have been better.
Yeah, it's going to be rough. I mean, I think that that's part of Marvel's, you know, press push is they've allowed all of the actors to be very candid about Edgar Wright's Ant-Man. But also be incredibly respectful to Edgar Wright. Like, they've all had nothing but good things to say about it, while at the same time talking about, like, why he wasn't there. You know, all of them pretty much mimic what Evangeline Lilly said of his movie would have been amazing, but it wouldn't have fit in the cinematic universe, and mass audiences would have rejected it.
There you go. The masses. The people that know better.
Yeah. I know better. You know who else knows better? Ready Player One. Best book ever written by humans.
You sure about that?
Yeah, like, it's better than the Bible.
No. I'm sure it is.
It's shorter, and it's got more 80s references than the Bible, at least.
And they'll be getting.
Yeah. I'm no stranger. I've proclaimed my love for Ready Player One on numerous occasions on the podcast. It's Ernie Cline's masterpiece. I think it's an amazing movie, amazing book. I'm afraid of the movie adaptation because of licensing rights, but it's neither here nor there. Word is, Warner Brothers has offered the directing job of Ready Player One to our very own Christopher Nolan.
Geek Legacy's own Christopher Nolan.
Yes. We knew him since he was a little baby. Raised him up like our own.
Like the Terminator did.
Yeah. And so, he's a talented filmmaker, so I mean, I can't poo-poo it on principle.
One of the best, Dave.
It seems like a weird... I can't imagine Nolan taking it. Well, I shouldn't say that. You know, he did the Batman movies. I was going to say he likes to write his own shit. But he did do the Batman movies, I guess, which are definitely adaptations. So I guess it's conceivable if they threw enough money at him. Zach Penn, who wrote the screenplay, has basically come out and said that it's a licensing nightmare. For those who haven't read the book, there's not a page in the book that doesn't have a reference to 70s or 80s music, video games, television, comics, TV shows. It's just got it all, and if they do it right, it's going to be amazing. If they do it wrong, I'm going to fucking go burn down Warner Brothers. Mm. You're going to hear first. But if Christopher Nolan were to pass, they do have a short list of other directors that they have have had conversations with that they would like to explore. One being Peter Jackson of Hobbit fame. We'll see.
What about Christopher Columbus? Is he on that list?
No, Christopher Columbus sadly is not. Edgar Wright from Star Trek 3 conversation 5 minutes ago, he is on the list. But I think the one that has me most excited is Robert Zemeckis. You know, he directed a lot of these great 80s movies, like, you know, your Roger Rabbits, your Back to the Futures, all of which have numerous references throughout the book. You know, the main character rides a DeLorean as his, like, way to get around in the virtual reality, and... Roger Rabbit's mentioned, I think he at one point like has like a sex doll that looks like Jessica Rabbit. I won't get into it, but I could see Zemeckis pulling this off, and I'd be very excited to see that. I've talked for a lot. What do you guys think? I know you guys haven't read the book, even though I keep telling you you have to read the book. To where now you won't read the book just out of principle because I'm irritating. But knowing what little you know of the story, do any of these four directors excite you more than the others? Justin?
No. Christopher Nolan would be fun. I'm down with that. I think it would be fun to step away from serious movies and do this one.
Nice. All right. Randy, what about you?
I'm a big, big fan of Zemeckis, and for a lot of reasons, but I'd really like to see him take this because they're it's so rooted and grounded in the 80s, and so are so many of the movies that we associate with
the John Hughes collection. Yeah. But he died, but whatever. He would have been a good Dave, John Hughes. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Zemeckis. There are no less than probably 100 John Hughes references in Ready Player One.
There you go.
It is all over the place.
And for the record, I've read about a quarter of that book, and it's taken me about 2 years to get that far through it. It's not because of any fault of the book at all. It's just I don't take the time to read. So it's fantastic, and I love it, and it's still sitting on my my reader on my phone. But I just haven't got around to it. Glowing recommendation for the film, but let me tell you, if you're a fan of pop culture and 80s stuff, you're totally going to dig this story, and the movie's definitely going to be worthwhile, even if you don't have time to read the book like me.
Yeah, and the good thing about the book is there's like a 3-page prologue. Go to a Target or wherever they sell books nowadays, Barnes & Nobles, whatever, pick up the book, read the prologue, the first 3 pages, you're instantly going to know if this book is for you or not after those 3 pages, so just try it out.
I read it in bed and fell asleep.
Like tip stuff. Let's try it.
Zemeckis, he's got an interesting resume.
Like Beowulf?
Yeah. Fucking Beowulf. And even The Flight, I hate that movie. What Lies Beneath? That was Zemeckis? I had no idea. Did you guys know that?
Yeah, he had, he had to do that because he wanted to keep the cast for Castaway.
Oh.
And so he made a whole movie so he didn't have to rehire a crew because they needed 8 months off for Tom Hanks to lose all the weight.
Oh.
From going from big Tom Hanks or medium Tom Hanks to small Tom Hanks.
Fucking Contact. I hate that movie so much. I don't know, man.
Forrest Gump. Jeff Becomes Her.
Yeah. Oh, okay. There you go.
Romancing the Stone.
Back to okay, Used Cars. Let's just go through his list really fast.
All right.
So, Used Cars, I think, is hilarious. Back to the Future, love. Who Framed Roger Rabbit, one of our favorites. All of Back to the Future movies.
You skipped Romancing the Stone.
I know, I don't really like that movie.
Oh, really?
I'm not really into Michael Douglas.
Oh.
He's a handsome man. I know, but I just don't like his movies.
Mr. Catherine Zeta-Jones?
Yeah, exactly. Not a fan. Not a fan. Where was I going with this? Oh, yeah. All Back to the Future movies. I don't like Death Becomes Her because Bruce Willis is in it, and I don't even really like Goldie Hawn. I like her in the one movie there.
First Wife's Club.
No, I like her.
Foul Play.
Overboard.
Overboard.
Put on a Wire.
Overboard. Randy was correct.
I knew which one it was.
I know you did. Forrest Gump, great. Love it. And freaking Castaway. Okay. That's it. What Lies Beneath was not good. I don't think I was expecting Harrison Ford to be a bad guy.
No.
That's one of the reasons why I actually like that movie.
Caught me off guard.
Because he's a mean old nasty man.
Yeah.
But also happens to be a murderer.
Yeah. By himself. That's basically a documentary shot in his home.
Yeah. All
the time. I don't know. Not good. Not good. Not good. But yeah, Zemeckis, why not?
It's not good. It's amazing.
Oh, no. I saw it at the drive-in.
Yeah.
Beowulf. We'll do it. My God, that movie was terrible.
With Angelina Jolie / animated Angelina Jolie.
No, it was weird because like they looked too much like themselves, but they were animated. I don't know. It was weird.
It was creepy weird though.
It was right. Like when I'm looking at Sir Anthony Hopkins there, I'm really looking at him like his animated version of him that looks so like.
It's almost like
game-ish.
Yeah. It's almost like if like decades from now, after all these actors are dead and somebody, you know, and CG has been perfected on the human form, right? Uh-huh. And they said, okay, Dreamcast, who would you want to have in this movie? We're going to animate it to look like they were actually giving live performances. You can pick anybody from any era, and they're just
John Wayne, Jason Statham buddy cop movie,
right?
Set in the 2000s.
It was just weird. It was too weird.
Yeah, it was weird.
And Grendel was your buddy.
Crispin Glover.
God, and it looked like him. And he already looks like a character as it is. Like, he just looks like a wacky man. And seeing him in that movie was bad.
I definitely would not be surprised to see him at a used car lot buying a windowless fan with a box full of candy.
Yeah. So interesting. I don't know, man. I haven't read the book. I'm not even remotely interested in reading it. I will because you love it and I love you. So I feel like in order to make this relationship work, I have to like what you like. So I'm feeling a lot of pressure.
Well, what we do agree on, what we do love, is Independence Day.
Oh.
The original Transformers. Independence Day.
Yeah.
And originally it was going to be two movies, but what are you hearing now, Randy?
Well, now we're getting definitive word that there is only going to be one Independence Day sequel, which isn't to say there isn't going to be another one later on down the road, but they're really putting all their eggs in one basket with just this one. So just last week, Fox officially greenlit Independence Day 2. And guess if you had to pick a wild guess, what year do you think this is going to come out? Like 2017 at least, right? They got to take some time to get this thing going and do all the VFX and everything. Right. At least 2 years.
Totally.
Nope. Midsummer 2016. And get this, the release date, June 24th.
I know. What a dumb fucks.
What is... I don't care what other movie it's going up against. If you're releasing a movie called Independence Day, why are you not going to open it on 4th of July weekend? That is just silly.
Yeah. I mean, well, because what? 4th of July is the... in 2016 is on a Monday.
Yeah, do it on the Friday right before that.
Perfect. Yeah, the first.
I'm trying to remember what's coming out that day.
I want to say the first one came out, I could be wrong, but it was, I want to say maybe July 2nd?
Yeah, 1996.
In 96? Yeah. So, I mean, the precedent is there. Go for it. Do it. But, yeah, so, but here's my gripe about this one. They're talking about returning cast members and, bringing back Jeff Goldblum, which is awesome. I dig his character, and I like him personally. And Bill Pullman, you know, I'm a fan of anything that Lone Star is in. And but the biggest name missing from the list is Will Smith. And for me, Will Smith is what really made Independence Day what it was. Now, I actually sat through the travesty known as After Earth just last week.
No good?
Because no. It was so bad. I got that stuck in my head. Thanksgiving weekend, I had all the pay channels for free on my cable service. So sweet. I just DVR'd a shit ton of movies, and I'm slowly trudging through them. And After Earth was one I didn't really want to watch, but I wanted to see what all the hype was about. And it is so not good. And I know probably, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but Will Smith plays like this by the books proper military character who like doesn't even crack a smile. It's not the fun, funny Will Smith that we know and love. And maybe that's one of the reasons why people didn't receive it as well as they possibly could have. But man, it made me miss the Will Smith of old. And then that made me nostalgic for Independence Day. And then now seeing that he's not going to be in the sequel, that took a barely chub wiener and made it completely flaccid for this project.
You know, in Land War with the aliens.
I think it would be interesting, but I don't. With access to such amazing technology to completely dominate us by air, why bother even sending down ground forces? You know, granted, I'm sure in the decades since the original movie took place that we've been able to reverse engineer a hell of a lot of tech to be able to fight the aliens with, and maybe we'll actually get to see that on screen. So that would make us kind of a even match for them in the air, or maybe even on the ground for that matter. So I mean, it's a compelling idea. It's interesting, but here's the thing: I think a lot of the people that are going to be really a lot of the people that are sustaining these tentpole kind of blockbuster movies, they are either too young to have experienced the original Independence Day when it came out, or they're older like us and maybe just don't care. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to work. And that's why they only greenlit the one movie instead of two, just because can they revive this 20-year-old franchise? Yeah. Or can they turn this standalone into a franchise after 20 years?
Producer Dean Devlin, he was real cautious to say that the exciting part that people should be fixating on is that we've had the alien technology now for over 20 years, and what secret applications could the government have come up with in that time frame? So I think
plausible deniability.
Yeah, exactly. Now just for to do our due diligence, July 4th weekend. So July 1st, Tarzan, David Yates from Harry Potter, his Tarzan movie comes out, the Angry Birds kids movie comes out, and the BFG, Steven Spielberg's Big Friendly Giant adaptation out of a novel. So it's a very, very children-friendly weekend. The next Friday would be the 8th, which would make, you know, I guess that means that the 4th of July is going to be on a Tuesday. So, you know, why not?
Is it weird that there are so many movies already with planned release dates a year and a half in advance from this point right now? That just seems weird to me. And I know they like to plan them out years in advance, but it's only kind of a recent thing, isn't it, that they've been planning that far in advance, actual concrete release dates?
Well, now it's just the new paradigm. It's just now we're all franchises, you know.
Yeah.
They don't do original IPs anymore, and so, you know, like Marvel has dates staked out to 2020, and DC has dates staked out to 2019, and so now everyone who has properties needs to stake out these release dates, because, you know, we saw with Batman v Superman and Captain America 3, they ended up choosing the exact same day, and, you know, obviously, you know, you really, in today's box office environment, you really only have one, maybe 2 weeks to make the lion's share of your revenue. And so if you're going up against big competition, you're basically fucked.
Right. Yeah. I get that for the big properties. I do. I totally get planning it out. But kids' movies and little movies and shit like that, that just, to me, I don't know. It's just a sign of the cinematic times that we're in.
Yeah. You're trying to tell me that BFG is not a big deal?
Big fucking giant? What is it?
Big Friendly Giant. It's based off a children's novel that Spielberg's going to direct.
I like Justin's version better. I would watch that movie. Big fucking giant.
It's going to be the porno version.
Yeah.
I like porno. I see a
good looking lady. I'm like, you want to see a big fucking giant? Zip.
Yikes.
Ooh, it's like an iron giant.
Let's go from happy in pants to sad in face, Justin.
Oh well, yeah. Let's not be sad. Let's celebrate the wonderful life that was Mr. Ralph Baer, who can be referred to as the grandfather of video games. He is the guy that saw the vision in video games long, long time ago. This man was 92 years old, but it was his technology that brought forth the first home console to living rooms. It was actually licensed by Magnavox. It was called Odyssey. And it was this technology that ultimately inspired Mr. Nolan Bushnell with Atari. Ultimately brought us Pong, but Mr. Ralph Baer, he's an amazing man. Loved video games. And actually, he went on to create Simon. Did you guys ever play that? Simon?
Oh man. Yeah, I totally grew up with that game.
Yeah, that was his vision.
It drove me nuts. I wanted to throw that thing out the window, but
oh, I know. Remember the commercial when the kid with like the coat came in and
yeah, and he's like
I'm gonna
like
beat this shit.
Popped up collar and the
I bet he had one of those like fingerless gloves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love 80s commercials. They're amazing.
Seriously.
I sent you one the other day.
I know, and it was McDonald's, and I hate McDonald's.
That was a creepy commercial.
I know. Man, there was a lot of those characters. There was the Hamburglar, Grimace, Birdie.
Fry guys,
and yeah, it's nuts. I don't like
Mayor McCheese.
Terrible, terrible, terrible. But yes, he is a fine young man. He was a fine young man. And I think that the video game industry owes him a huge debt of gratitude, and we would not be where we are today if it wasn't for him. And I think that's amazing how there's just those people out there. There's those one in a million that come up with these amazing ideas that just shape the way we do things in our everyday life. Now that I think about it, I'm a little sad I'm not one of those people.
Well, you're not dead yet. You still can be one.
That's true.
You got a long time left in you.
Just think, you know, video game revolution, you know, that his first foray into video games was in, like, what, the early 60s?
Mm-hmm.
So he would have been 40. So you still got a couple years.
Yeah, there you go.
Don't give up hope.
You should probably start on it now.
Come up with Toy Story 4.
You did.
I have that.
I wanted to watch Home Alone with my kids this weekend, but it's not on Netflix, and I sadly don't own it.
You should get it, man. You can get both on Amazon right now for $10. Use our Geek Legacy link, so we will make some money, and we will thank you for it.
Hey, I will thank myself. Well, good on you.
Home Alone on the Blu-ray there. $12.99. Get Prime. 2 days free shipping.
On F Prime.
Speaking of Chris Columbus.
Jungeth Prime. He was right down the street. I'll ship it to his house.
There you go. Do it.
There you go.
That works. But yeah, so I think that he actually deserves to be our Geek of the Week because he is a super geek.
Absolutely. Good call.
Good on him. Huzzah.
Huzzah.
List, Randy, what you got?
Top 10 worst Christmas movies ever.
You
guys up for that?
Yes. That's
more than ready for it.
All right, cool. Now, number 10.
Is, I bet.
Yeah, I think you might know what number one is. Number 10, Surviving Christmas, with a whopping 7% fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Ugh.
And if you guys remember that, has the wonderful Ben Affleck with James Gandolfini.
God rest his soul.
Number 9, the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Aww.
I don't know if I would really count that as a movie, but it is feature length. And it
B.
is
Arthur's
quite
in
depressing.
That. How bad can it be?
I think you just answered your own. You just answered your own question. B. Arthur's in it. Dot dot dot. But yeah, not even the animated world introduction to Boba Fett can salvage that. But for a lot of people that are lifelong Star Wars fans, it is a holiday tradition to watch every year.
It's
I am
Boba
not
Fett
one of those.
Riding a dinosaur for Christ's
I know, right?
Doesn't get better than that.
Through like a pink swamp.
And he's got like a taser trident.
Yeah, yeah.
And he pretends to be a good guy.
That is pretty crazy. But hey, it's pretty cool though. I mean, that's the one cool part of it, folks. If you ever are a little bit curious about the Star Wars Christmas special, look at the silly costumes, look at some stills online, and if you watch any video like on YouTube, just watch the animated Boba Fett part.
No, go straight to B. Arthur.
And there's Carrie Fisher singing. There's Mark Hamill with way too much eye makeup. Harrison Ford. Yeah. Harrison Ford even shows up in it. And here's the thing. Okay, there's a bunch of Wookiees in this thing. But because they wanted to do it on the cheap and they only had one full Chewbacca costume, they have them all wearing these big red bathrobes so that they didn't have to do the fur for the Wookiees underneath the costume, and they couldn't make high quality masks like the Chewbacca one in the movie, so they used the merchandise, the Don Post Studios Halloween masks that were released for Chewbacca to make these Wookiee masks for all the family. It's just straight off the shelf Don Post Studios Halloween masks. I thought that was pretty fascinating. I actually just read that today. I did not know that. But anyway, that's just a testament to how cheap they made that holiday special for. But the world was clamoring for more Star Wars, so we got it. It's just one of those things. Be careful what you wish for. Number 8 on the list, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And I'm talking about the live-action Ron Howard, Jim Carrey fiasco.
Oh, I like that movie.
You know, I like the animated one, and I have tried watching this twice, once in the theater and once at home, and I've never been able to remain awake for the duration of the movie.
It's long, dude. It's like over 2 hours, I think.
I watched it in the theater twice.
Did you really?
Did. I saw it when like a group of friends went to see it. I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll watch it again. I like it a lot. I think Jim Carrey's amazing as the Grinch.
Yeah, I have nothing against Jim Carrey as the Grinch in general. It's just the pacing of that movie. I don't know exactly what it is, but something just makes it really difficult for me to get through.
You don't like cute little girls. That's why. There's cute kids in it.
Probably not. Yeah.
Cindy Lou Who?
I'll pass. You know what else I'll pass on? Number 7, Christmas with the Cranks. Tim Allen has a long and storied past when it comes to making really shitty Christmas movies, and this is just one of them. Next. This one is a film that I'm not familiar with, but number 6 is The Nativity Story. While playing the Virgin Mary, the film's 16-year-old star, Keisha Castle Hughes, was herself pregnant at the time of its 2006 release. It was a little bit of unintended method acting, and it received all sorts of scathing reviews, apparently, especially when they found out the 16-year-old star was pregnant.
And she was Queen Jumla in episode 2 and 3 of Star Wars.
Oh, there you go.
See, bringing it back to Star Wars.
Everything should be brought back to Star Wars as far as I'm concerned.
I'm there for you.
Number 5 is the 1964 classic Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. And of course, you've probably never seen it unless you have binge-watched some Mystery Science Theater 3000, because that one was a staple of their 90s repertoire. That was one of the films that seemed to show on cable and TV a lot, where they just rip into Santa Claus versus Conquers the Martians. It's all about elves fighting aliens. But done in 1964, so imagine the cheese factor.
Huh. Cheese.
Cheese.
Queso way.
Queso. Wait. Number four on our list, Four Christmases.
Aww. I like that movie.
Vince Vaughn and Reese Witherspoon. It's
it's funny. Know,
I've personally never seen it, but this particular list is really mean-spirited towards Vince Vaughn because the next one on our list is Fred Claus, and you have to admit the premise for that film is pretty ridiculous.
So I like that movie too.
Santa Claus has a brother, and he's a repo man played by Paul Giamatti, yeah. and Vince Vaughn is somehow a 6'5" like freakishly tall elf.
No, that's not right.
No, that's not.
In Fred Claus, Paul Giamatti is Santa Claus. Vince Vaughn is his brother, who is his strange brother, who is a repo man, who's trying to start his own business, open up this club or something, and he needs money from his brother, and he decides his brother will only give him the money if he comes to the North Pole to help him out and visit.
He wants to open an off-track betting.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, OTB.
Yeah, there you go. Off-track. And then he ends up saving Christmas. But it's actually really funny, dude.
Is it?
Yeah, it's good.
Clearly, I've
never
seen
it. It's got a great supporting cast.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
See, that's why I'm glad I have you guys here to fact check and see movies that I don't watch.
I think it's on my holiday gift guide that I made for holiday favorites.
That's funny.
It's It's good, Randy.
It is. And, Kevin Spacey's in it. Like, he's trying to shut the North Pole down.
Yeah, Mr. Northcutt is his name. Mr. North... A little on the nose, but it's still funny.
Yeah. And it's good because, Vince Vaughn's immortal. Because, when Santa becomes, immortal, when Saint
becomes
Nick
a
does,
saint, yeah.
Yeah, when he becomes a saint and he never ages, his whole family doesn't age. And so, he has to go, holiday dinner. So it's, Santa Claus, Fred Claus, and their parents. And they're like, why do you suck?
Yeah, well, his mother's Kathy
Bates.
Like
your brother?
Yeah. And she's always comparing, because you know how there's this thing where a parent can compare their two kids. Why can't you be more like so and so? And of course, that is a terribly offensive thing that you can say to somebody, and you be your own person, right? And he's offended by that, and it's amazing. I think a lot of people could actually relate to this movie.
Yeah, you can't measure up to Santa Claus. Sets the bar high.
Yeah. It's nuts.
Number two on our list is the Arnold Schwarzenegger classic Jingle All the Way.
Loosely a classic.
Jake Lloyd.
Schwarzenegger versus Sinbad with the debut of a very young and probably equally annoying Jake Lloyd, who we all know as the young Anakin Skywalker from Episode 1.
Also on HBO recently, and I watched it.
Really? I haven't seen that movie since it first came out.
And Phil Hartman's in it, too.
Yeah.
That's one of his last roles, I think.
Yeah. Sadly.
Good call.
It's not good.
No, it's pretty bad. But he's funny.
Yeah. He's funny in everything.
Yeah.
He was a definite loss.
Yeah.
Number one on our list right now is Kirk Cameron's Saving Christmas with a whopping 0% on the tomato meter on Rotten Tomatoes and a 1.3 star rating on IMDb. And to even get a proper rating on IMDb, you have to have something like over 1,000 reviews to show up on their lists, I think.
It's and, number one on the bottom 100.
Yeah. So a lot of people are mistakenly calling it the worst movie ever made. And believe me, there's plenty of movies that are worse. But I think people's gut reaction to this movie is so much just it's so negative because of all the press that it's been getting that people are very quick to call it the worst film ever made.
Right. Well, Kirk Cameron's is starting campaigns to try to get people to upvote it on Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb.
Yeah.
I couldn't finish. I watched half hour of it and I had to turn it off. I was late at night. I'm I'll watch it as a goof, and it is atrocious.
I'm now, if anything, this is making me super curious. Now the tomato meter that I'm seeing is the critics voting. Now the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes is 32%, which isn't terrible. It's semi-respectable for Rotten Tomatoes, but he has taken to all sorts of social media asking his followers and anybody who loves the Bible to go to Rotten Tomatoes and to actually upvote this film, because he feels that the higher the audience score, the more people that it's going to attract, the more people are actually going to want to see it, because he's nobody pays attention to the critic scores.
Right. I mean, it has a good message, but at the end, it's just preaching to the choir. The message that he's given to the people isn't relevant. You know, like, I understand, you know, a lot of people are tired of, like, the happy holiday stuff, you know, I mean, because they celebrate Christmas. But, you know, other people don't. So happy holidays is, you know, the corporate way of saying all of them put together without offending anybody. And so his message is, you know, this is about Christmas, this is about Christ. Let's have a good time and celebrate the birth of our Lord. And that's great, but that's not a message you have to sell to the people that he's selling his movies to.
Right. Exactly.
He's not changing anybody's mind.
Right.
So it's just a useless exercise, and it's one of those movies that, like, is very schizophrenic. And like I said, I've only seen about a half hour to 40 minutes of it, and it's trying to be funny, it's trying to be, like, serious, it's trying to be dramatic, it's trying to be, like, a family film, and it's one of those, like, jack of all trades, master of none. You know, you have to know what your movie's going to be and make that movie. You can't be, it's almost like it was like a Four Rooms type thing, where it's directed by, like, five different people and they all had five different visions.
He added Kirk Cameron into the mix a lot.
Kirk Cameron directed the fifth room.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. After Tarantino, there was another room.
Tim Roth goes down to his room.
Yeah.
It's full of a bunch of Bible-thumping Christians.
Yeah. You know, that's one of my favorite terms, Bible-thumping.
Yeah.
God, it just makes so much sense. As soon as you say it, you just know exactly what it means. And there's no confusion whatsoever, and I love that.
I thought for sure we were going to see Santa Claus the Movie on your list, the Dudley Moore classic.
Oh, yeah.
No, I didn't even see The Santa Claus with Tim Allen, or even the
That's
second
it's awesome.
Santa Claus 2.
The third one's terrible. The third one's bad. Yeah.
I watched the first one. I actually enjoyed it.
It's good.
The sad thing is, I actually legitimately do enjoy a lot of the movies on this list, the ones that I've seen anyway. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
Have you not seen Four Christmases?
No, I've not seen Four Christmases.
It's funny.
We own it, yeah.
Yeah, and Fred Claus is funny, too.
I like it. I own that one, too.
Yeah.
This week's list came courtesy of E! Online.
I would have thought Bad Santa would be on their list.
Oh, yeah.
That's not as good.
I kind of enjoyed Bad Santa.
You are a Bad Santa.
I am. I'm the
sitting on my lap, little girl. Speaking of sitting on my laps, you got a game, Justin?
I do. Ooh. Just a simple movie trivia game that I picked up at the Target there, and all you gotta do is shout out the answer when you know it. This game cost a whole whopping $1 USD.
That's pretty cool. I think the challenging thing about this is it's going to be any topic, right?
Yes. It's all over the place.
It's not going to be just like one movie, one franchise, one director, whatever.
But it's all movie questions?
All movie questions.
Sweet.
Yeah.
It's going to be super simple. And I hope that all of you do well. When I say all of you, of course, there are only two of you, but you'll figure it out.
Let's be fair, Amanda would have got the same score regardless if it's here or not.
Yeah, so, and feel free to play along in your car or at home in the shower, whatever you're doing right now while you're listening. These two will probably shout out the answer pretty quickly, but who knows? Maybe you'll even win.
Hey.
All right. Number one. What is the young boy's name in 2010's How to Train Your Dragon?
I don't want to mess it up. Is it Hiccup?
Yep.
Okay, I'm sorry. Toothless is the dragon.
Yeah.
David, in my head.
David has one. All right. Number two. What animation movie company did Apple's Steve Jobs help to form?
Pixar.
1986. Randy was correct with Pixar. One and one.
I said Pixar too.
I know, but he was faster. He was quicker on the draw, like the Wild Bill we were just talking about. Number three. What became the biggest grossing animated picture of all time in March of 2014, overtaking Toy Story?
Frozen?
Very good, Randy.
It's just the time period. That's the only thing I can think of that made a lot of money that was animated.
You got two. David's got one. Question number four. That's not right. Yeah, it is right. I thought my math was wrong. That's funny. Number four. Which 1998 movie starring Bruce Willis and Ben Affleck had the tagline Earth?
Armageddon.
It was fun while it lasted. Randy is correct. What is that, four for you now?
Three.
I'll take three.
Oh, yeah. You're right. I should be writing this down. You guys keep score.
Three out of four questions so far.
All right, there you go. Even better. I don't have my normal notes because normally I have it all typed out and ready to go, but now I got cards in my hand. And I have no right instrument. What phrase featured in a song from The Lion King is an actual Swahili phrase
that
means no worries? David is correct. The Kuna Matata.
Swahili, huh? I did not know that.
Everybody knows that.
Well, did you know that Icky Woods will celebrate anything?
Are you ready for number three?
Yeah. No, I'm ready for number five, six.
Yeah, I guess it's number six, but on this card it's number three. Are you ready for number six?
Ready.
All right. In Despicable Me, what is Gru's first name?
Never seen it.
Oh, that's a tough one.
You
automatically get the point for never seeing it.
What?
I'm kidding. That's a handicap question. Is it okay to say handicap? That's a cripple question. How about that?
That's a what?
I think handicap is generally better.
I know, I'm just kidding. Dave, do you got an answer for me?
Gregory.
Way too long. No, it's Felonious.
Oh, damn.
It's just funny, like he's a felon. Good one, goal. All right, no one gets that. Number seven. What is the name of Captain Hook's happy henchman in the many adaptations of Peter Pan? I heard David first with Smee.
Can't believe it's Despicable Me, Randy. It's good.
I don't know. I'm like way behind on my animated movies.
Hey, who's hosting this game?
I haven't seen How to Train Your Dragon.
I don't know what number we're on, one or two. Justin. You tell me.
Yeah.
We are on eight.
Good job.
No.
Eight. Seven.
No, we're on eight.
We're on eight.
We each have three. We missed one.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
In 1951, Disney animated version of Alice in Wonderland, what does the tag in Mad Hatter's hat read? You got that?
Like 10 over 9? 10 ninths?
Ooh, you're close, Randy. You are close.
10 sixths.
Yes.
Damn.
Which means 10 shillings, 6 pence. A form of English currency when Lewis Carroll's book was released in 1865.
That's funny. I thought it was just bad math.
No, I did too. Like
it could be both.
Bizarro world. Like Wonderland math. All right. Number 9. How many minions are... Well, we can't do that one because Randy never saw fucking Despicable Me. It wouldn't be fair. Okay.
There's no fair.
Don't worry about it. When was the first movie theater opened?
Like the exact date?
Just a year.
Wow.
Just guess.
1914?
No.
1895.
No, that's what I said, Dave! How funny, I said.
Was 1895 when Thomas Edison made the Black Mariah?
I don't know the answer to that. But in
1905?
In 1905, and it was named the Nickelodeon.
Hmm.
I think I get credit for mine.
No, you don't. The card says 1905. It was named the Nickelodeon.
Well, neither of us were alive in 1905.
By Despicable Me logic, that doesn't count.
And was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
I was only 9 years off. You guys were 10 years off. If this were Price is Right rules.
Yeah, but you went over.
You went over. You lost.
Yeah. He could have said fucking 10 BC and still won. So there.
I'd like to change my answer.
No, you cannot change your answer.
Well, no, then I'd still win because I was under Randy.
I know, right? All right, moving on.
Yes. This is number 9.
Number 9.
Are you guys ready?
Ready.
Yes.
Is this really number 9? Not really.
Yeah, this is number 9. I have 4, Randy has 3, we missed 2.
Okay.
I guess it's 10 then.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's all right. Number 10. To what state does the stork deliver Dumbo?
Oh, wow.
There's oranges there.
Florida?
Florida.
David is correct. And you went there on your honeymoon, so I'll go ahead and give you some points. Plus, you've been there
several times. Because he visited the state?
Yeah, he went there for his honeymoon there, and he went there probably for a high school field trip or some shit.
I have been there 3 times.
Have you been to Florida, Dave?
I have not been to Florida.
You get no points, nor do you deserve any points.
Is that the golden snitch this week?
These games are getting deceptively anti-David. You know, it started out slowly with you not wanting me to win, and then you had instituted the golden snitch rule. I might have to call shenanigans on this new rule.
No. So now it's 4-4. This is getting hot. Let's do one more.
Wait, so I get 0 points for the correct answer, and Randy gets a point for not answering it, but for visiting the state.
Well,
I just want to make sure I get the rules right here.
He did answer, but he just wasn't as fast.
Just like Mr. Deeds rules when the kid's playing cards. What's the name of the game? I win.
To be honest, though, and I know there's a certain amount of delay in Skype.
Yes.
But I heard myself say it the exact moment that David said it. So.
And that's fair. I can't argue against that. So, Randy wins that one.
Okay, so you ask the Golden Stitch question. I will let Randy answer, and then I will answer.
Well.
Is this the Golden Stitch? The tiebreaker?
Yes. Here we go.
All right.
This is a tough one. I actually got this one right. Lynn asked me this question in the car, and I got it.
Have I been to this state?
No states.
Okay.
Okay. What is the name of the dog treat advertised in the animated 101 Dalmatians movie?
Oh, my God.
I know this.
There's a little song. Blank, blank are fun to eat. They are a tasty treat. Time's up. The answer was Canine Crunchies. But we'll go ahead and do another one. Are you guys ready?
Yeah, it's been way too long since I've seen that movie.
Probably.
I don't really like it.
What was the first animated picture to be nominated for Best Picture?
Beauty and the Beast.
David wins. Beauty and the Beast. I actually said Snow White and I was incorrect.
I would have said Snow White too. So
Snow White was the first one to win like an honorary Oscar. It won an Oscar and seven little mini Oscars.
Seven little ones, yeah. And Shirley Temple gave it out, didn't she?
Yep.
See, yeah. So that should be correct too. So Randy! I'm kidding.
Why do you hate?
David, you are the champion. Congratulations. No one can ever take that win away from you.
You try hard, though. You try your damnedest.
No, you did very, very well. Considering you botched Florida.
Did I? Did I botch Florida?
Firebomb the entire state.
And by botch Florida, you meant answered it 2 full seconds before Randy. Anybody got any shout-outs?
I do.
I do,
what
too.
You got? Oh, whoa. I want to hear Randy's first. Go for it.
I don't even have any. I was just making that up.
I'd like to give a shout-out to the Maniacs on Movies podcast. I was actually a guest earlier this week. We talked for an hour and 20 minutes on the 88 seconds that was the Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens teaser. Just me and one other dude just going on and on and on about Star Wars. If you want to hear us geek out and you want to hear... It's extremely spoiler heavy. So if you don't want to know a lot of the rumors and speculation about what's going on with that movie, you might want to avoid it. But if you're kind of curious, check it out. We more or less break down the whole movie and put it in context with the teaser, and just geek out about it. So it's kind of fun. Check it out. Maniacs on Movies is on iTunes.
Exciting, Randy. You were on another podcast, Randy?
I was.
Moonlighting, son of a bitch.
Why didn't you tell? I would have listened.
Yeah.
Well, it just hit, so it's only been out for a couple days, and I wanted to make the announcement here. And also, I was waiting for our last week's podcast to hit so I could promote them both at the same time. But
oh, yeah. Sorry about that. Due to technical difficulties on our end, that'll have to air at some point as like a lost episode.
Yeah.
Cause it was I gave a shout out on that podcast to Justin and Tyler. So you guys get the shout out again. Good job. You guys rule.
Maybe I can combine them both to one super mega podcast.
Ooh, you should. I like that.
Listen to, our other podcast, the Geek Legacy Network. You know, you got your Comic Corner podcast with Tyler and the Mighty Jer, Jeff, where they talk about comics on their pull list. And they have a nice little format. They do news, they do reviews, and they have a little rant and rave section to where usually they're either raving about something great or ranting about something shitty, and they've had quite a few good little interviews, and it's definitely worth checking them out. And then, of course, you have the Pixelated Podcast with Justin and Steven, where they talk about everything video games, and they even make it intelligent enough for me. You know, I'm a big dum-dum.
Well, it helps that we do it at 8 in the morning, and we're all on our stupid pills.
No, it's great, and you guys are... fantastic team. You're definitely like a Laurel and Hardy type thing. You guys play well off each other. And I don't want to say that, but when you're next to anyone next to Steven's the fat one.
Yeah, he's he's under a buck. That guy could have been a jockey.
Riding it. But yeah, they're both fantastic podcasts. You know, make sure that you
I think he podcasts with a little writing crop in his hand.
Make sure that you subscribe and like their podcast. Maybe write a nice little review. And definitely do it for us, too. You know, that's how the best way for people to find our podcast or their podcast is, you know, people like to see that the podcast has favorable reviews and that people are writing, you know, nice little things about it. So if you truly love our show, take the 2 minutes and give us a 5-star and write like a 2-second little blurb like, these guys are freaking awesome.
Yeah, well, then we'll have you on the show.
Yeah.
If you want to be on the podcast, we'll have you on. No joke.
You write a review, email us with your with a screen cap of your review, or just tell us to check it out, and we'll have you on the show. You can play the game.
Yeah, how about that? That'd be fun.
Yeah, you can come on in the game, and if you have a podcast or a website, you can plug whatever you want, as long as it's not like anime midget tentacle porn.
Right.
And maybe, just maybe, we can have some sort of fun prize if you win the game.
Oh, yeah. You got to beat me and Randy and Amanda.
I'll even donate something out of my private collection.
What? Ooh, going into this private stock.
We'll pull it out of the old Geek Legacy trunk there.
Maybe a shirt.
Oh, there you go.
Come on the show, play a game, win. We'll send you fabulous prizes like you've never imagined. So, yeah, that's a great thing. You guys, you write us a review and then shoot us an email at infogeeklegacy.com. Let us know that you did it, and yeah, we'll have you on the show. You guys can you can play the game and plug whatever you want.
Yeah. Plug the hole.
Yeah. And while you're on that internet machine, check out Tony Tolato at scifitalk.com and Tim Byers at thefullbleed.net. They'll fill your eye holes with some good material before we fill your ear holes with something better. Make sure to like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Geek Legacy. And for all your geek news and reviews, geeklegacy.com.